Moving down to
Item 21.
To the EO's report.
Okay.
We can just launch into that and see how far we get.
Okay. I'll skip to page 5 unless there are questions prior to that. But on page 5, Michael Thomas has provided you with an update on the once-through cooling policy that's proposed by the State Board. And that calls for State Board consideration of that policy in June of next year. And I don't believe we have a draft yet. I haven't seen a draft yet.
Roger, is that symposium in January open to board members? Is that something we can attend or we cannot?
Yeah, you can attend.
You can attend. We can attend. Thank you.
So what we can do is keep you posted on specifics about that as it develops. And we can circulate the draft policy of the board once we receive it. Let's see. Yeah,
well, what do we anticipate in terms of timing with the finalization of that policy? I mean, I see here June adoption of policy, but does that have to go through further review at that point?
Well, I think Lori wants to weigh in, but I'll say as far as development of state policy, this is probably an optimistic schedule the way things go, and as far as a track record and actually developing the policy, I'd say this is the optimistic schedule.
Yeah, definitely.
So are we, you know, we have some items in our region that fall into, you know, the purview of those regulations. Are we, I mean, what staff's time frame in terms of getting those back before the board?
I'm not sure of staff's time frame in terms of whether this board wants to wait for the policy. I think we can continue to assess how fast it's moving. What we're waiting for at this point is the Riverkeeper decision to become final. That was the decision that struck down the EPA regs. And EPA suspended the regs anyway, but the deadline for petitioning for Supreme Court review of those regulations is October 3rd. And industry has indicated that they're going to appeal. We don't know if EPA is going to appeal. So that will, I guess, will eliminate whatever guidance we have right now, because currently the Riverkeeper's a citable decision. I think that the State Board will adopt a policy before EPA will revise its regulations, but that's not a great benchmark. We do have the Voices of the Wetlands case on appeal. That's the Moss Landing 2000 permit, and oral argument on that case is in 2 weeks. So depending on what happens in that case, we may have additional guidance on what 316B means or some deadlines to reconsider it.
So we're just kind of in limbo waiting for these other two matters to get further along and mature.
Right.
Yeah. So what is the effect if EPA has revoked the regs?
Well, they suspended them, which I think means they can reactivate them if the Supreme Court overturns the Riverkeeper decision.
Okay. And the effect of the appeal in and of itself doesn't have any bearing on
the appeal. Won't reactivate the regulations because EPA suspended them. Right. It would make the Second Circuit case not citable, which would put us in a difficult position because we don't have the regs and we don't have the case that we can decide.
Okay.
I think where it's easier for us if we have no regs but we have this case, because
right.
we have some guidance on how to right. address these permits.
Right. All right. Sounds like we have to wait. Yeah. Mr. Shawcross.
Yeah. Someone involved in this had contacted me, and I contacted Roger. They were wanting to know when this was coming, when the Moss Landing case permit was coming before us. And I thought something was going to come up at our first meeting, our first Northern meeting in the new year. Is that? I can't remember, Roger.
Well, we do want to wait and see.
What we said was going to happen.
We want to wait and see what happens with this appeal, but I guess it's pretty well guaranteed that industry is going to appeal.
Industry will appeal the federal case on the regulations. I don't know if anybody's going to appeal our Moss Landing case, but I don't remember anything being planned for early next year. I think
at one point
we may have been talking about Morro Bay.
No, this was just sort of informally, but
maybe we're going to do a
maybe we should have some sort of report at that meeting.
I think
and it may end up being in closed session, depending on what happens with this litigation.
I think that was early summer when we had some communications about that, and at that time we thought the earliest that we could have an item before the board as far as Moss Landing goes, I think we said the first of 2008.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make that clear for folks what is likely to happen at that first meeting, that first Northern meeting. Thanks.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we said, we'll have to evaluate how state board policy is going. Certainly it's frustrating to think there's always some policy or, say, regulation development that we need to wait for, because the EPA took how many years to develop the regulations that were struck down?
30.
So,
I know, but it's frustrating for folks who are out there waiting for something to happen, and we're saying, well, we're waiting for yet one more ruling, issue, decision, and so I think maybe we could at least have a process update at that meeting of, you know, where we are, who we're waiting for this time, sort of thing.
Okay.
And in terms of the state board policy, it would certainly make the regional board's decision-making a lot easier, but you don't necessarily have to wait for it. If it comes out after the permit's issued and the permit needs to be reviewed, it's going to go back to the state board anyway. So if they don't have a policy, they can weigh in. If they do, they can fix it.
Okay, well, we'll update our what our potential status is as far as the permits
at the first Northern meeting.
Well, we can probably provide that for the next meeting, and then of course provide that in writing to the person that Mr. Shawcross is referring to.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Next item on page 5 is information in response to a question that actually, again, Mr. Shawcross brought up at the previous board meeting regarding a site in Santa Barbara County. So we looked into that, and it's a bit of a long story, but as we concluded here, there is good news as far as the fact that they are proceeding now after the explanation of the delays.
Roger, I had a question on the MTBE statistics. The just there at the bottom of page 5, just before the So I had asked at the last meeting whether there was a decrease in new cases containing MTBE, and so I'm a little confused by this paragraph and the figures. The paragraph says the answer is no, but there is a decrease in the number of new cases. So the question, what isn't clear from the figure is, what percentage of these recent new cases still have MTBE in them? You've got 27 new cases, 27 of the 47 have MTBE, but the rate is decreasing the last three fiscal years. So if we looked at 05, 06, 06, 07, that's 10 cases. Is the proportion of MTBE still the same?
Yeah. Burton Chadwick, tank staff. The statistics are about 50% during the last 3 years containing MTBE or not. I attempted to graph things, but I wasn't not able to tickle out those that contained MTBE versus those that don't. So the graphs indicate the total caseload.
Yeah,
irrespective of whether or not they had MTBE.
Okay, so we are seeing a total caseload going down, but the proportion of MTBE is not going down.
That would be correct.
Okay, so it is safe to say that new MTBE cases are overall going down because the whole caseload is going down.
Yes, that's correct too.
All right, so maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and one day we won't have MTBE cases.
One day we won't have tank leak cases.
Well,
it's out there in the future. The program is meant to dissolve through self-destruction.
I don't think your job is in any jeopardy.
I'm pretty optimistic, sir.
Well, anyway, this is good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Burden, aren't most of the MTBE problems from vapor?
Well, one method of the MTBE becoming available in the subsurface is due to volatilization in the tanks, and the vapors themselves were releasing from the tanks and not product in gasoline necessarily. And so the MTBE is hydrophilic and likes to absorb to soil moisture, and which is a great mechanism to migrate to groundwater. I think that was your question.
As opposed to just liquid leaks.
And I can't give you statistics on that. We also had liquid leaks that caused MTBE problems.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got our usual update on the our regional monitoring program, CCAMP, Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program.
Any data to show us?
No.
No.
But if you have questions, we'd be glad to answer them.
Can you answer questions about the data?
Well, I saw Mary earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always informative, to the board to see kind of what's going on as CCAMP goes through these different, portions of our region. It's something we get to weigh in on. It's not enforcement, it's not issuing permits, but it gets into, more thinking about planning and what we should be doing.
Yeah, I think one of the areas where we made a lot of progress is integration of CCAMP. We spent a lot of years just developing the program, getting the rotation throughout the region sort of institutionalized, but I think what we've really been successful in most recently is integrating the use of the data and the expertise of our CCAMP staff throughout the rest of our operations, whether it's permitting or developing total maximum daily loads, or you've got an example here on page 8 of Mary Adams being out in the field and catching a problem that was related to stormwater violations and then following up on that. And we've talked about integration of CCAMP data, toxicity data in particular, say in the Santa Maria Basin, with urban sources and agricultural sources and tracking those down. Mm-hmm. So I think we made a lot of progress recently with the utilization and just the beneficial use of our CCAMP program. So it's a lot more powerful.
Okay.
Could I ask a comment?
Sure.
I noticed, I guess we're all ringing here this morning, I also noticed that CCAMP staff had a chance to meet with the Ocean Protection Council, and my understanding is that they had a chance to bring to the attention and raise the awareness of the OPC staff on the existence of water quality data that's been developed through both CCAMP and CLEAN. And I wish, it's too bad Karen isn't here to comment
on
that.
She's on her way down.
Oh, good. I would like to hear a few comments from her about it, because I think I had hoped that the OPC would be the entity to identify water quality funds to monitor water quality in the coastal environment. And my understanding is that that's not the case. They also are not able to identify significant funding to support both short-term and long-term monitoring needs. And I think without seeing that component of the ocean management program that's been developing through the OPC's efforts, without seeing the funds to support that, this program can go the same way as every other effort where we lack the monitoring component. So I think it's going to be very essential for the regional board to contribute to that process, whatever information we can provide, and to also utilize the resources of the regional board staff expertise and so forth. But again, we're looking at, and I think we need to signal to the state that regardless of these great efforts, until we see some funding and stable funding over time, we're not really going to understand how effective our policies are. So I was very encouraged that OPC, at this point is recognizing and pulling together, a discussion to better understand, better define in terms of that program what effort the state has made to this point to identify and establish water quality programs that are going to tell us about the nearshore and intertidal environments. There's Karen. I was just kind of rambling on, waiting for you to. I had some questions for you. If you could fill us in a little bit on the.
Sorry, I was hiding.
On the OPC meeting, because I was very encouraged by that meeting. I think we would like to hear more about the kinds of issues and possibly where you think it could lead.
So far, my impressions haven't been. Well, I have approached it from a different place than you. I was working directly with staff and was discussing what I felt were some of our funding lacks with regard to monitoring.
Right.
In particular, we were talking a lot about sort of the locations of our coastal confluence sites and how they pretty much pair up with the marine protected areas, and we felt that that was a great opportunity for collaboration, and perhaps what we're really hoping for was some supplemental funding. We were talking to them about the fact that we were coming to board. This is back when we were approaching the board about increasing the CCAMP endowment through Guadalupe funds, and that we were hoping we could arrange for some match funds from OPC or other sources. So I had that dialogue. This was at a staff level. But at the same time, there were multiple other monitoring-type agencies similarly lobbying for funds. And one of them actually was SeaClean, because SeaClean is also going through some changes, which you'll hear about for the December meeting, in that they had they've done 5 years of work and have looked at discharges from the rivers and the streams as a point source monitoring organization and said, we don't think we should be paying for this part anymore because it's showing that a lot of pollutants are coming out of these rivers and streams, and somebody else should be stepping up to the plate to fund this. So we're actually looking at losing a piece of our overall monitoring effort that's related to loading of pollutants from rivers and streams to the ocean. So we were talking to OPC about that as well. And it's really interesting because it's Coastal Conservancy staff, and so, I was diverging. Never mind. I won't go there yet. They took in all this input from the monitoring community. We met with them. We talked about monitoring needs. I brought up all these issues I just mentioned to you. And then they went away for a while, and I called for an update, and she said, well, our staff just met, and we've kind of decided we're not sure that we want to support monitoring generally, that we think we'd rather go towards implementation, funding of implementation. So that's the last I heard from staff at the staff level.
Yeah, that was my understanding, too,
yeah,
that we were hearing the monitoring. Once again, monitoring is a component that may not be funded and may not comprise, the full policy.
Right. And then also, asking for funds, what we're really trying to do is build an endowment. We don't really want to get a grant. That's not how you fund monitoring. It's not an effective way to fund monitoring because it's, a single pot of money that goes away. So what we really want to do is build sustaining funding, and state agencies are difficult to work with in that regard.
Yeah.
And, you know, there may be other sources that might be more appropriate. But
although the stopgap for Sea Clean.
Right. We said, you know, if we could get funding for 3 years to keep the river gauges going, which I think the cities of Watsonville and Santa Cruz will continue to. So there's really only two others, Carmel and Salinas, which is probably $50,000 a year. It's not a lot of money, relatively speaking. So,
I'm sorry, the other two that might not, Salinas and...
Carmel River. Carmel River, potentially, we've been talking a lot with the State Board and Southern California Coastal Water Research Program about ASBS monitoring and what they're going to do with that. And one thought was that might get wrapped into that monitoring component. But the State Board came out with a straw man monitoring proposal that looks very different from that type of monitoring. So I'm not sure where all that's going to go. We're still sort of in meetings and discussions about their monitoring approach for ASBSs. And I think that they were planning to propose a very large, I don't know this, but the State Board staff, I think, may be looking to request funds from OPC to fund sort of the natural water quality component of the ASBS monitoring so that they would pick up a piece of that. So it would be an assessment of overall ocean water quality. But what they're proposing right now is very oriented towards assessment of the status of the waters as opposed to what's going into the waters.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Quite a question for you. In the first paragraph of the staff report section on CCAMP, you've got, I think, an observation here about the data, but I'm not quite sure.
Uh-oh.
It says SAGs, or large swings in oxygen concentration, are indications of nutrient over-enrichment or other chemical or temperature impairment. Is that just a general statement about dissolved oxygen, or is that something specific about the data from what was collected from the Santa Maria watershed?
We see that in parts of the Santa Maria watershed,
okay.
But generally, when you see large swings
right,
in
okay.
dissolved oxygen, it's associated with...
Okay. And have you made that observation from data from other agricultural areas that you've been sampling?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, nutrients and toxicity pop in my mind as the two kind of key... artifacts of impairment.
Yes.
From ag, and I'm wondering,
yes.
is dissolved oxygen also in
it's
there?
It's like an outcome.
An outcome. Okay.
Yeah, because you get high nutrients and
okay.
reduced shading,
okay.
and so then you see high swings in dissolved oxygen. And it's one of the things we measure in the ag
right.
program. Yeah, and it also goes into we have the biostimulatory index that we look at, so it's one of the, we look both at what nutrients which cause the problem, and then the outcomes, which would be pH and oxygen swings and algal growth and that kind of thing.
Okay, all right.
I reminded you about our five basin rotation, and this previous sentence here was referring to the Santa Maria sampling, but also the ongoing coastal confluence site. So it's more general than
okay.
Santa Maria.
Okay.
Right now we're upstairs, our last day of compiling a giant set of all the data we can pull together, including our own, to do the listing, which we'll be scanning all the data by water body to look at exceedances of all those types of parameters to prepare for the next listing cycle.
When do we get to see that?
I think there's going to be public workshops first, and I think we're bringing something to board. I think it was supposed to be in December.
Oh.
I don't think it's scheduled yet, though.
Lisa, do you know? Where'd you go?
She's talking.
Karen, is this part of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary SAM program?
We took the SAM data. We took everything else that got submitted as part of the public process, and we pulled everything into our format.
Okay.
And then you got, it's like got over a million characters in it. It's this gigantic quantity of data. No one's ever done it this way before. So we pulled everything into a single format, and now we're just scanning it for, you know, exceedance of various parameters.
Wow.
It's a really big project, and
yeah.
It's going to result in quite a massive amount of summer information.
So will you be presenting this at the, I think Sam is holding a November workshop on water quality?
We'll probably mention it. We won't be presenting the results there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So separate, you're talking
yeah,
about
this
separate,
is separate
public and a separate public presentation process?
Yes, for the 303D listing. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
On page 8, you've got some comments about repeated observations of human feces and trash. Now, is this in the Santa Maria section, or is this throughout?
We've seen that everywhere. We're working in the Santa Maria right now,
right.
And we have a couple of locations. We've documented human feces repeatedly.
Now, does this go back? Have you seen this in your previous cycle, 3 years ago?
In some cases, we're seeing things getting worse. Like in the Pajaro, the trash was distinctively worse this time around than the first time we were there.
Okay. And the first time around, was anything done with...
Well, the first time around, the trash wasn't as big an issue.
Right.
But we have been, you know, contacting counties and that kind of thing. And in some cases where the sites were really represented a public health problem, we've gotten in and cleaned things up. I mean, we have sites where there's needles and evidence of all kinds of unpleasant, unsavory activities.
Right.
So we have worked with various counties and health departments and that kind of thing.
Well, I just wonder whether when you have something like that, that you shouldn't be sending out a notice of violation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, in fact, what it is? Or
what
is it a phone call or what?
It depends. You know, what we're doing with... That was part of what this was about, is we were trying to decide what the process we wanted to take when we find circumstances like this. We decided with private landowners, the first thing we should be doing is just telling the landowner, because they definitely, with food safety issues, don't want that happening on their property. And in the case of the one site, it was cleaned up right away that we were working on in the Santa Maria. But we met as at the office with TMDL folks and stormwater folks and talked about how we want to proceed with this kind of thing and set up a process for first, you know, contacting the landowner and then working with enforcement, local enforcement, if necessary.
When you contact the landowner, is it a telephone call followed up by a letter, or...?
It's been a telephone call to date.
Okay. I would strongly encourage that a piece of paper go out also.
Okay.
Just so there's no misunderstanding.
Sure. We can do that.
What was said, when it was said, so that there's something, you know, in the file...
Right.
...that isn't lost in memory.
Right. Okay.
Somewhere.
We can do that.
Yeah. And there should be some follow-up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're there every month, so we have good opportunity to follow up in multiple ways. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And I know you probably know this, but sort of a tactful, cooperative-sounding letter?
Well, frankly, it's really important to us because a lot of these sites, we value a relationship with the landowner if we want a sample there. So, you know, being... That's important.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Karen on CCAMP or anything related to it?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Over here.
Yes.
You asked when the board would be able to see the listing report.
Right.
And it says in the staff report here that they'll bring it to the... We're planning to bring it to the board in February or March.
February or March.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Briggs, how far should we continue with the EO report?
That was it as far as items I was going to highlight, so
okay.
We can conclude the EO report and unless there are other questions.
I do.
Dr. Valker.
Yeah. I'd like to talk a little bit about the... Guadalupe funds. Just a little. Okay. Okay. So what? I'm getting uncomfortable, I guess we could say. And the question I would ask is, what is the purpose of settlements and fines? And presumably, it's to either compensate or mitigate damage done to an area. What I'm a little bothered by is if we compare natural areas, if you will, with more developed areas, the net flow of resources is from natural areas to developed areas, be it timber, fish, berries, water diversion, what have you. And there's very little flow of resources back into natural areas. So what I'm getting uncomfortable with is particularly the low impact development establishment, because that's an urban issue. It's a development issue primarily. And there's no area that's more threatened at the present time than natural areas. So I'm a little uncomfortable with the trend of taking resources, let's call them, resulting from problems, settlements and fines, and moving them from the type of area in which they occurred to fund areas outside of that purview. Now, I'm not saying it has to be applied to the same area, but I feel that natural areas, particularly with the pressure on development, are really threatened, and we need to really think about allocating resources generated in more natural areas into development areas.
Yeah, of course, we're going to be bringing the whole issue back to the board. We're targeting February for doing that.
Good.
But just generally speaking, the way we've been looking at it is, first of all, as far as mitigation, one of the basic ideas here that sometimes people have misconstrued is that UNICAL, which is transmogrified into Chevron, is on the hook for continued cleanup at the oil field site itself.
Mm-hmm.
The settlement was for allegations as far as what happened with the leaks. And actually, the biggest chunk of the settlement went to the Department of Fish and Game.
Mm-hmm.
There were two separate accounts, one for $9.1 million and one for, I believe, it was $11 million. So about $20 million in funding for restoration projects.
Right.
And Fish and Game certainly has the opportunity for focusing on areas that where restoration makes sense and can be accomplished, and they've been in favor of providing that in the area as much as possible, that geographic nexus. The Water Quality Fund, which we've been talking about as far as low impact development and the CCAMP proposal, was for water quality projects in the region. It does say that we should consider geographic nexus, but it is for water quality projects in the region. And if I may, as far as low impact development, actually the Santa Maria watershed is one of the two primary watersheds in our region, Salinas and the city mm-hmm. of Salinas and its growth pressures being the other one. But the city of Santa Maria was right up there in terms of potential for impacts on natural resources in that watershed from the pressures of development. So we thought that there was a really good nexus in the Santa Maria watershed. Guadalupe is also another urban area that's actually closer to the source of this problem that prompted this settlement that could benefit from low-impact development. So that would be a benefit to natural resources, because the natural resources include the receiving waters, which are affected by high-impact development, the opposite of low-impact development.
Mm-hmm.
And we know, we were just talking with Karen here earlier, and we know that we've got significant problems in the waterways of the Santa Maria watershed, and some of those are from urban sources.
Mm-hmm.
So we do see a nexus there. I don't know if that totally answers your concerns.
Well, what I would like to do is to plant that seed of thought for all considerations of, are you taking resources from one type of an area? And that eliminates the geographical fiscal aspect and moving to if the net flow is from natural areas to developed areas, there ought to be some way, there ought to be some reseeding, if you will, or enhancement of natural areas as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a lot of what has been done with actually funds from the water quality settlement from the board's first round of projects, as well as this fish and game restoration fund. And it's still ongoing. They actually, Fish and Game with the $9 million chose to set up an endowment for the lion's share of that, just as Karen was talking about and growing an endowment for Sea Camp. Fish and Game chose to set up an endowment and to fund projects on an ongoing basis rather than just spending down that money. But that's for restoration projects. Okay. Well, thanks for those thoughts.
Well, stay tuned, Dr. Bowker, as the board works on this. All right. Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did not speak up in asking for a little more information on, so going back one item in this EO report, the challenge of that's been put forward by the DCEL response group. Mr. Briggs, can you comment on that a little bit?
Yes, pardon me. Ocean View, yeah. It's okay to expand on that, isn't it? It's on page 10 of the EO report. Just saying that they filed a petition. Okay.
Thank you.
As it says here, the petition is being held in abeyance because the petitioners said that they were interested in working with the regional board to try to resolve the issues without going through the whole petition process. So I talked to two of the representatives from the petitioners. There are three petitioners. I talked to two of them and understood from them that their main concern was backing up, you might recall that there was the issue about having a subsurface intake with basically a sand filter box for the primary intake, but then there's this auxiliary intake, and that seems to be their main concern. So they said if they could put a sand filter box on the auxiliary intake, they would probably be happy with that. And I said, well, we can certainly talk to the Ocean View people and see if they're interested in doing that. It would be voluntary because the board did grant the permit. So at the same time, I said, I'd like to know if those are the extent of the petitioner's concerns, so that I don't say, here's the deal, and then come back and say, oh, there's something else. So they, after some delay, they did get back to me, and they said the only other concern that they have is the Marine Sanctuary's approval. And we did work with the sanctuary actually even before drafting the permit, so they were involved in the ground floor of the permit. Peter von Langen talked with Deidre Hall of the sanctuary staff specifically. And then in the permit, on page 14 of the permit, we included language about the facility having to receive all other permits, approvals, etc., and we specifically mentioned the Marine Sanctuary. The sanctuary wants to coordinate their concurrence with the Coastal Commission action. So that's all they're waiting for, and I think the petitioners were a little concerned that maybe there was something else there with the sanctuary. But our understanding is that it was just a timing issue where they wanted to wait and coordinate with the Coastal Commission. But we did work with the sanctuary in the development of the permit. So, and I did contact the representative for the facility, and they don't have a response yet. We're working on it.
Thank you. Appreciate the details.
Yeah. Okay. I felt my leash.
Okay. Anything else?
Again, just if there are other questions.
Okay. All right. I don't see any. Why don't we then move on to